Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Well, the Republicans are up to their usual perfidious... I'm lacking words. It's reached that point. It's like I'm running out of adjectives to describe the Trump administration and the Republican Party. As we just saw another unemployment report, these weekly unemployment reports. This one wasn't the 700,000 new people filing for unemployment benefit. It was over 1 million. We are sliding, you know, as we're going right into the jaws of the third wave of this, or the second big wave nationally of this pandemic here in the United States, as a result of Donald Trump and Kristi Noem and a bunch of other Republicans actively encouraging people to get infected. Kristi Noem inviting 500,000 bikers to South Dakota so that they could all infect each other and then spread back out all across the United States. That was probably the number one super spreader event in the United States. And then Donald Trump holding rallies, maskless rallies all over the country. And we see now the maps, in the counties and areas around those rallies and the virus just spreading out from there. So, and we now learn also from internal emails within the Trump administration that this was actually their policy to try and get as many people as infected as possible. Somehow they completely missed the fact that, yeah, 1 or 2 or 3% of people die, depending on whose numbers you're looking at, when in the pandemic it was, and whether you're talking rural hospitals or big city hospitals. But nobody seems to be accounting for the fact that large percentages of people, even who are asymptomatic, but particularly people who have, quote, mild cases of COVID, end up with what may well be lifelong heart damage, strokes, dementia, cognitive dysfunction, mental illness, amputated limbs. I mean, it just goes on, the horror stories associated with this disease. And these people now have pre-existing conditions at the very time that the Trump administration and Republicans are refusing to even talk about. I mean, they're still trying to kill Obamacare, much less talk about single-payer health care or, Medicare for all. It's just mind-boggling. And now we discover that, Pfizer has millions and millions of doses of vaccines sitting in their warehouse that the federal government already bought and paid for. We bought and paid for 100 million doses. They shipped 2.9 million doses. There's tens of millions of doses still sitting in their warehouse, and the Trump administration is saying, just leave them there. We're not going to tell you where to send them. And then people are speculating all over the internet that you know, the reason that the Trump administration is saying this is because Donald Trump and his family own a whole pile of Moderna stock. I don't know if that's true or not. I'm not sure anybody knows. Could just be stupidity. Could just be incompetence. It could be that they still are doubling down on herd immunity. God only knows, but that's happening. But at the same time that that's happening, the Republicans and Mitch McConnell in particular, here's the deal. Let me just give you a little backstory on this, just a little bit of background. The Fed, the Federal Reserve Bank, the Fed, began earlier this year. In fact, I believe they began it in April. I'd have to go back and look, but it was around that time. It was in the spring. The Fed began doing something that they had never before done in their history, and that there are some people who are Fed watchers, and we've had this conversation on this program with a couple of different people since April, who are saying, you know, it's not even legal. It's not part of the Fed's charter. But what they have been doing is buying corporate bonds, in other words, corporate debt. In other words, they're loaning money to giant publicly traded corporations by buying their bonds. They're loaning them money, which is driving down the interest rate that big corporations need to borrow money at, so that it makes it easier for big companies to get cheap, cheap money, which it turns out a lot of these big companies are using to pay huge bonuses to their directors and their CEOs and dividend checks to their stockholders. Very, very few of these companies are using this money to help their employees. But nonetheless, the Fed is buying the bonds, and the Fed is buying stocks in the stock market, something, again, the Fed has never done. Fed was created in 1913. It's never done this before. And there's a debate about whether it's even legal. But the consequence of their doing this, what came out of the Fed buying, you know, buying corporate bonds, loaning trillion, they created out of thin air $7 trillion. And they're buying trillions of dollars worth of corporate debt to keep these big companies afloat. You know, the airlines, the big retailers, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it turns out, you know, well, that's a whole other thing, you know, how it's going to right-wing churches and weird stuff like that. But anyhow, so the Fed is buying the corporate bonds, and the Fed is buying stocks. And with the $7 trillion friggin' dollars. And the consequence of buying stocks and bonds, corporate stocks and bonds for publicly traded companies, has been that the stock market, which initially began to collapse in March as you know, the country shut down, the stock market did a U-turn and went back up again. And right now the stock market is at all-time highs. Why? Because the Fed is propping it up. So with that understanding, with that backstory, here's what Mitch McConnell and the Republicans in the Senate and some in the House are now demanding. They are demanding that if the Democrats want to give COVID relief to average working people and unemployed people, if you want to give everybody in the country $1,200 and you want to give everybody in the country who is on unemployment, if you want to extend their benefits beyond the end of the year when they're going to expire, and you might even want to add $300 or $600 a month to them, if you want to do that, the price to do that, Democrats, is that you've got to stop the Fed from buying corporate bonds and stocks. Now, what happens, and by the way, you've got to stop the Fed from doing that right after January 20th. Now, what happens on January 20th? Joe Biden gets inaugurated. And if they can stop the Fed from buying bonds and stocks and force them to start selling the bonds and stocks that they hold right after January 20th, what's going to happen to the stock market? It's going to go from 30,000 down to 7,000. There's going to be a stock market collapse that'll make 1929 look like a friggin' picnic. And who's going to get blamed for it? By the average American who has no idea that the Fed has been propping up the market all this time, that it's not Donald Trump's brilliance. They're going to say, oh God, Joe Biden comes into office and look what happens to the market. The bottom falls out. This is what they're doing. This is a calculated political move by Mitch McConnell and the Republicans to essentially, you know, saw a leg off Joe Biden's presidency. So that's number one. There's so much news. Number two, we've got hacks. Why are we being hacked by the Russians, apparently? Well, could it have something to do with Donald Trump saying nothing during that time? Or back in 2002 with George W. Bush privatizing all our security with SolarWinds, whose password is SolarWinds123? So for our Tom Hartman Insider video that's available over at TomHartman.com, I'm talking about Donald Trump just completely giving in to Erdogan of Turkey, the president of Turkey, the dictator of Turkey now, and this theory that Jared Kushner okayed the killing, at least the capture, perhaps the killing of Jamal Khashoggi to Mohammed bin Salman, and that Erdogan has the tape of it, and that when he called up Donald Trump and said, I want you to pull out of Syria and give me those Kurds so I can kill them and take that land, that he did it because Erdogan threatened him. And then Erdogan comes to the United States a week or two later and gets a whole state dinner thing. Check it all out. It's over at TomHartman.com. I think you'll find it fascinating. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. I want to dig into some of the news here, and then I'll pick up your phone calls. The Pentagon is in shock, as is the rest of the country, because the Trump administration ordered the Pentagon to stop coordinating with Joe Biden on the transition with the Biden team, which raises all kinds of questions. You know, there's a simple explanation, a possible simple explanation, a possible more complex explanation, and a possible insanely treasonous explanation. The simple explanation is that Donald Trump is still tweeting. He threatened Mitch McConnell tweeting about the election. He said to Mitch McConnell, if you don't hold a special session, if you don't refuse to, he didn't lay it out specifically like this, but it was implicit in his tweet. If you don't, take alternate slates of electors, or if you don't throw this thing to the House of Representatives per the 12th Amendment, then I'm going to destroy the Republican Party. That's essentially what he says. You can read his tweet. It's on Twitter. He said, there will be no Republican Party left. So he's threatening McConnell. So it's possible that Trump simply turned to the people around him in the White House, including the liaisons with the Pentagon, and said, I'm going to stay president. I'm going to force Mitch McConnell to make this happen. So you can stop coordinating with Joe Biden because he's not coming in. I'm going to stay here. Now, that's one possibility, theory number one. The second theory is that he's simply trying to sabotage the incoming Biden administration. He's doing absolutely everything he can, even though it means harming this country during a time of national crisis, unlike anything we've seen since World War II or the flu epidemic in 1918. He's explicitly willing to damage our country and our national security in exchange for getting vengeance on Joe Biden for beating him in the election. The third possibility is that some foreign government, or multiple foreign governments, the Russians, the Saudis, the Chinese, I mean, who knows who else Donald Trump owes money to, Turkey and Erdogan, would love to see the United States all screwed up. They'd love to see us fail. They'd love to see our military falling apart. The third possibility is that he's intentionally sabotaging the Pentagon, because that's what he's been doing for 4 years. Intentionally sabotaging the United States on behalf of foreign governments. The more aggressively Donald Trump can question or even end democracy in the United States, the happier a whole bunch of other nations that he's very close to, who hate democracy, will be.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. but you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Welcome to the Tom Hartman University Book Club. Today we're reading from ADHD and the Edison Gene, a drug-free approach to managing the unique qualities of your child. This is from the introduction. I was in India in 1993 to help manage a community for orphans and blind children on behalf of a German charity. During the monsoon season, the week of the big Hyderabad earthquake, I took an all-day train ride almost all the way across the subcontinent from Bombay through Hyderabad to Rajahmundry to visit an obscure town near the Bay of Bengal. In the train compartment with me were several Indian businessmen and a physician, and we had plenty of time to talk as the country flew by from sunrise to sunset. Curious about how they viewed our children diagnosed as having attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, ADHD, I asked, "Are you familiar with those types of people who seem to crave stimulation, yet have a hard time staying with any one focus for a period of time? They may hop from career to career and sometimes even from relationship to relationship, never seeming to settle into one job or into a life with one person, but the whole time they remain creative, incredibly creative and inventive." "Ah, we know this type well," one of the men said, the other three nodding in agreement. "Well, what do you call this personality type?" I asked them. "Very holy," he said. "These are old souls near the end of their karmic cycle." Again, the other three nodded agreement, perhaps a bit more vigorously in response to my startled look. "Old souls?" I questioned, thinking that a very odd description for American psychiatrists have diagnosed as having a particular disorder. "Oh, yes," the physician said. "In our religion, we believe that the purpose of reincarnation is to eventually free oneself from worldly entanglement and desire. In each lifetime, we experience certain lessons, and finally we are free of this earth and can merge into the oneness of God. When a soul is very close to the end of those thousands of incarnations, he must take a few lifetimes to do many, many things, to clean up all the little threads left over from his previous lifetimes." Another businessman added, "This is a man very close to being enlightened. We have great respect for such individuals, although their lives may be difficult." Another businessman raised a finger and interjected, "But it is through the difficulties of such lives the souls are purified." The others nodded agreement. I said, "In America, they consider this behavior indicative of a psychiatric disorder." All three looked startled and then laughed. "In America, you consider our most holy men, our yogis and swamis, to be crazy people as well," said the physician, with a touch of sadness in his voice. "So it is with different cultures. We live in different worlds. We in the Western world have such holy and nearly enlightened people among us, and we say they must be mad. But as we're about to see, they may instead be our most creative individual, our most extraordinary thinkers, our most brilliant inventors and pioneers. The children among us, whom our teachers and psychiatrists say are disordered, they may in fact carry a set of abilities, a skill set, that was necessary for the survival of humankind in the past. It has created much of what we presently treasure as our quality of life, and that will be critical to the survival of the human race in the future. There is immense power in how we choose to view what's happening around us, and this is terrifically important when we consider how we can best know our children and provide them with the upbringing they need, an upbringing that will lead them to be healthy, happy, functioning adults. The premise of this book is that children who have what we have come to know as ADHD are important and vital gifts to our society and culture, and in the largest sense can be an extraordinary gift to the world. In addition, for those adults who have been similarly diagnosed or defined, this book offers a new way of understanding themselves and their relationship to the world, a way that brings insight, empowerment, and success. The long history of the human race, as we'll see in this book, has conferred on us, some more than others, a set of predilections, temperaments, and abilities carried through the medium of our genetic makeup. These skills are ideally suited to life in the ever-changing world of our ancient ancestors, and we have now discovered are also ideally suited to the quickly changing modern world of cyberspace and widespread ecological and political crises that require rapid response. I will call this genetic gift the Edison gene, after Thomas Edison, who brought us electric lights and phonographs and movies and literally 10,000 other inventions. He is the model for the sort of impact a well-nurtured child carrying this gene can have on the world. While I'm principally referring to the DRD4 gene, see Chapter 5, the science of genetics is embryonic, with new discoveries being made every day. No doubt, sometime soon, we'll have a better, more complete list of the specific genes that make up what Dave DeBronckart first called the Edison trait back in 1992, and Lucy Jo Palladino expanded on considerably in 1997 in her wonderful book, The Edison Trait. For the moment, though, I'll use the useful shorthand of the Edison gene. When Thomas Edison's school teacher threw him out of school in the third grade for being fidgety, slow, and inattentive, his mother, Nancy Edison, the well-educated daughter of a Presbyterian minister, was deeply offended by the schoolmaster's characterization of her son. As a result, she pulled him out of school, and she became his teacher from then until the day he went off to work on his own for the railroads. And thus continues the story of people with ADHD and great success and how you can help your child be like that. Barbara in Sun City, Arizona. What's up, Barbara?
Hi. Well, something that makes me crazy is why are we so incredulous about what people like Ron Johnson are doing when they decided in 2018 that going for a July 4th holiday, eight senators went to Moscow. Now, we don't know what they did other than do take pictures, but I'm sure the Russians do. You know, we go, we don't know what they're doing, but the Russians know.
Yeah.
That's why they're...
At the time, it was just portrayed as basically a junket. You know, members of Congress do this all the time. They get the taxpayer to pay for them to go to some place that they've always wanted to see, kind of thing. But, given Trump's relationship with Trump Tower Moscow and his, you know, secret meetings with Putin and all this other kind of stuff, it does raise questions.
Well, Ron Johnson is the most outspoken anti-Biden senator.
Well, he's also in charge of the committee that's in charge of national security in the Senate.
Right, exactly. I mean, the whole thing just stinks. It's been stinking for years, and nobody's looking at it. I mean, it's like, let's get our reality glasses on, and, you know, why in the world would these eight Republican senators, if it was really a junket, it would have been bipartisan.
Yeah, I'm with you. Barbara, thank you. Thank you. It's something that somebody needs to be looking into. Russell in Hendersonville, North Carolina. Hey, Russell, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom. I think we're missing an opportunity again with this whole thing with the Republicans going on and on about voter irregularities. We should join them and say, yes, we want to get rid of all voting irregularities. So what we're proposing is paper ballots from here on. A national voting holiday, and all the other things that we can make our elections totally transparent. If they're really on board, then it would be great. We'd get it done. And if they were to balk at all, then we would say, see, once again, the Republicans want something done, but we're trying to get it done, and then they, you know, they put the kibosh to it. What do you think?
Russell, we already proposed that. The very first piece of legislation that passed the U.S. House of Representatives, H.R. 1, not only provided for strengthening election security and hardening our election infrastructure from, you know, external or even internal hacking, but also provided money and means for every state to, if they want, to go entirely vote by mail, or certainly to wildly expand their absentee ballot access, you know, where people can vote by mail. And created some national standards for it. It went to the House of Representatives in January of a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, now almost now, and maybe February, but it was literally the first piece of legislation that passed the House. I believe it was at the end of January of last year. And Mitch McConnell has refused to even allow a committee to consider talking about it. That should tell you everything
right
you
now,
need to know
they
about
have their
the GOP.
Right now, when they have their panties in a bunch and they're just going on and on about all this, this would be our perfect opportunity to say, okay, let's put up or shut up. You know, you people really want us done, and then we should adopt that bill.
I'm with you. And the difference, you know, there's two different issues here, Russell, and I think you're pointing one out and I'm pointing the other out. The one that I've been pointing out is, yes, the Democrats already did this. They tried to solve this problem. But what you're pointing out is nobody knows that. The Democrats have not been messaging that. They've not been yelling and screaming, okay, yes, we agree. We have problems with elections in the United States. Let's fix them. We propose legislation to do it. We'd be glad to rewrite it with you. Let's do it out in the open. Let's hold public hearings. Let's make this happen. That is not going to happen as long as the Republicans are in control of the United States Senate. There's going to be no hearings there. I mean, look at what happened with Ron Johnson trying to do his little dog and pony show. But it could be happening in the House, and frankly, I think it should be. And when Biden becomes president, I am very hopeful that he's using his bully pulpit on a weekly basis at the very least, and perhaps on a daily or occasional, you know, several times a week basis, to, you know, the way, not the specifically the way Trump, you know, is tweeting 20 times a day, but we need to hear from the president. If Barack Obama, every single day that Mitch McConnell had refused to even hold a hearing on Merrick Garland, if Barack Obama had raised holy hell every single day, I don't think Mitch McConnell could have withstood that for 8 months. But because Obama thought, well, I'll just be a good Democrat and we'll just be kind of quiet and we'll do the right thing in the background, you know, McConnell just rolled right over him. And we can't, the Democratic Party cannot do that anymore. We've got to stop that. Russell, thank you for the call. Mike in Fort Collins, Colorado. Hey, Mike, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I spent the first 28 years of my life in Kansas. And when things come up in the media about it, I pricked my ears up. Last Saturday, USA Today had an article that said, what is the most deadly place in the country for COVID? And that's Gove County, Kansas, a county with like 2,600 people. And if I've done my calculations right, they've killed off 5% of their population. Also, wow. The mayor of God City wanted to do a mask mandate.
Right. She had to resign over that.
Yep, she resigned over that. And there's an AP article in the Denver Post that the COVID outbreak in the Kansas State Prison in Lansing is second only to South Dakota. And right. I want to say this is not the Kansas that I grew up in. And it really pisses me off. But there's really nothing I can do about it.
Yeah, I totally get it, Mike. And this all goes back to Donald Trump thinking back in March, April, that if most of the damage that this virus does is in blue states, and back then it was New Jersey, Connecticut, New York, and if most of the people who are dying are black or Hispanic, and that was the case back in April when Donald Trump made this decision, then our imperative, if I'm going to get myself reelected, we've got to get the economy back in shape. Keep in mind, the month before in March, the stock market had fallen. So we've got to get the economy back in shape if I'm going to get myself reelected. So we have to pretend like there's no virus and just get people out there going back to work to keep the economy going so I can get myself reelected. And he held that position through the entire friggin' year. And as a result, we have 300,000 dead Americans. We have 17 million Americans who have been infected severely enough that they've showed symptoms enough that they've gone to get themselves tested. There's probably 30 million Americans who have been infected or more. You know, half of them don't know it because they were entirely asymptomatic throughout their infection. And out of those 30 million Americans who have been infected, there's probably somewhere between 3 and 10 million Americans who are going to suffer long-term consequences and be disabled to varying degrees and have a pre-existing, and all 30 million of them now have a pre-existing condition should Trump and the Republicans succeed in completely destroying the Affordable Care Act. Mike, I hear the pain in your voice about the state that you were born and grew up in. I would feel the same way if this was going on in Michigan. Thank God Gretchen Whitmer is there, but I spent the first 27 years of my life in Michigan, and I totally get it.
I thank your screen for articulating what I was trying to say. These are the true believers. These are the Trumpansies, and they are willing to die for him.
Yeah. And they don't realize that he's asking them to die for him so that he can get reelected and the election's over. I mean, it's like he can't stop the rhetoric now. He's taken a rhetorical position that first of all, that there is no virus, it's not a big deal, just go back to work. And then secondly, when it became too big to ignore, it's nothing we can do about it. We need to do herd immunity, get everybody infected, as many people as possible. That'll take care of it. And, yep. You know, both were just insane, just absolutely insane, both policies. But those are the two policies he's pursued. This is going to go down in history as not just the worst public health disaster in the history of the United States, but the biggest betrayal of the American people by any president. I mean, this is like Franklin Roosevelt saying after Pearl Harbor, only 4,000 people died, 4,004 people died. Why should we care? This is like George W. Bush after 9/11 saying, it wasn't even 3,000 people who died. It was 2,999. Come on, we lose more people than that to cancer every day. What's everybody so upset about? I mean, this is, it's like Abraham Lincoln saying, General Lee took a city, so what? I mean, this is insane. It is a betrayal of this country. And not to mention, destroying the lives so far of 300,000 families who have lost their loved ones and millions of families whose breadwinners, whose principal income earners will probably no longer be able to earn an income because they're disabled by this disease. Mike, thank you for the call. I'm so sorry to hear what's happening in the state where you were born.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
On this week's Science Revolution, Vien Trong with Tom Steyer's Climate Justice joins the show with a vision for a green, red, and blue climate New Deal. That vision includes Native Americans, a blue New Deal for our threatened oceans, and a green New Deal for our coastal communities. Dr. Michael Greger joins us. Have you gained a few COVID pounds? In his new How Not to Diet cookbook, Dr. Greger tells how you can eat your way to a healthy, sustainable weight with plant-based meals. Terry Mills, president of the National Nursing Network, drops by on why a National Nurse for Public Health is important. Plus, Laura Packer, the founder of Healthcare Voices, explains open enrollment under the ACA to help the 16-plus million uninsured Americans get themselves enrolled. Tune into the Science Revolution wherever fine podcasts are found.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. We will, I'll be getting back to your phone calls in just a few minutes, but there's a couple things I wanted to share with you first. At the top of the list is that there is a new article out in The Nation magazine, or at least on The Nation magazine's website, thenation.com. And it's titled Talk Radio, Democrats Can't Win If They Don't Play. And it's by a guy you might be familiar with, me. The subhead is the vast right-wing talk show network across the United States has enormous political sway and Republican politicians know and embrace it. And, a lot of it is stuff that you've heard from me before. And so I'm not going to, exhaustively go through it again, other than to point out that politics is a game that is typically played in terms of winning and losing elections on the margins. It's around the edges. If you can shave 2 or 3 points off your opponent by, say, for example, putting so few voting machines in your opponent's neighborhoods that people have to stand in line for 8 hours to vote, if that can discourage just 1 or 2 or 3% of the people from voting or cause them to quit the line and have to go back to work, you can win an election. Well, similar, and of course, we all know this has been, you know, a major Republican strategy for the better part of 40 years now, to make it in particularly in black neighborhoods, in Hispanic neighborhoods, in communities where you've got a lot of students, and in communities where there are a lot of very elderly people who might be voting Social Security and Medicare, typically Democratic issues. And so, you know, that's what Republican voter suppression is all about. But the other main strategy that the Republican Party has been using in a big way since the mid-1990s, and Newt Gingrich was a real pioneer in this, in using talk radio this way, is talk radio, is right-wing talk radio all across the United States. There is literally not any part of the United States with any population of any consequence. I mean, you might have on some mountaintop in Utah where you can't, well, even there, you know, you can get a radio signal. I genuinely believe there's no place in America where you cannot just turn on your car radio and tune across the dial and find right-wing hate radio. On the other hand, if you want progressive talk radio, if you want to hear, you know, conversation about the issues from the point of view of the Democratic Party or from the point of view of progressives, good luck. I mean, you know, there's some great stations in this country, but they are not in every city. They're not even in every blue state. We have entire blue states with no progressive radio stations. Sirius XM, the Progress Channel, God bless them. I mean, they're holding the fort here. And I know, you know, many of you, a large percentage of you are listening to me right now on Sirius XM. And we are so grateful for that clearance. And Sirius XM has been expanding this now with they've got an app and you can listen to them on the web and you don't have to have a satellite receiver anymore unless you want it in your car. And if you have it in your car, of course, you can literally drive from coast to coast and never lose the signal. It's a pretty amazing thing. But with conservative talk radio, it's everywhere. It's ubiquitous. And if the Republican Party had to rent, they call it lease actually in the industry, but if they had to rent all the right-wing radio stations in America that run 24/7 right-wing talk radio, and in many cities, well, here in Portland, we've got 3 different right-wing stations. And they're big signals. In fact, the biggest signal in the state is a right-wing station. And so, you know, if the Republican Party had to actually rent that time, it would cost them $5 billion a year. Now, the Democratic Party has stations, as I said, you know, in a few cities. We've got, you know, we're growing. And we've got a lot of nonprofit stations that are popping up and Pacifica stations that are picking up more and more progressive talk and that kind of thing. But by and large, it's been right-wing media. And it's been right-wing media not because there's not an audience for left-wing talk. People say, well, when the article came out, in fact, I had a number of people on Twitter going, yeah, but Air America failed. Well, let's see. Air America was on 54 stations that they were renting or leasing or that they had cooperative barter agreements with Clear Channel, what was then called the Clear Channel Radio Network. Clear Channel has over 800 radio stations all across the country. Mitt Romney's Bain Capital bought Clear Channel. Clear Channel then started dropping progressive talk from their stations all across the country. And surprise, surprise, in 5 years, Clear Channel was $17 million in debt. That was their bankruptcy, $17 million. Now, to put that in context, the first year that Rupert Murdoch ran Fox News, he lost $100 million. The second year that he ran Fox News, he lost $80 million. And according to Britt Hume, it was 5 years before he made $1 on Fox News. He lost several hundred million dollars. Air America went bankrupt on $17 million. And much of that, yes, there was some, you know, incompetent management. I'll give you that. Randy Rhodes and I were yelling about it at the time. But by and large, when you start losing radio stations and you depend on advertising revenue to stay in business, I mean, you know, Mitt Romney killed the network, you could say. Now, that certainly wasn't the only thing that was going on, but, you know, I've told you the story about meeting with the billionaire owner of one of the three big radio networks in the United States, over 600-700 radio stations, a good chunk of them carrying right-wing radio, and I said to him, you know, would you put progressive radio on any of your stations? He had just bought the network that was syndicating my show. And he said, no, we're not going to put that on any of them. Zero. And I'm like, why? And he's like, well, because I'm not going to put people on the air who say that my taxes should go up. And then another time, there was another radio network, Salem Radio, that has Dennis Prager and Hugh Hewitt on it. And I was sitting next to one of their senior executives at a talker's luncheon. This was maybe a decade ago. And I said, hey, you ever thought about putting progressives on? And he says, no, it hurt our brand. Plus, you know, we're a company that started out as a Bible publishing company. We only put real Christians on the air. And I'm like, I'm a real Christian. And he's like, no, you're not. You're a liberal. I mean, it wasn't that's not a literal. This is my recollection of the conversation. I didn't write down every word he said. But that was the essence of what he said. So this isn't about progressive talk radio can't work. We have stations. We've got a channel on Sirius XM. We've got stations around the country where it does work. It's just that, you know, basically since Reagan stopped enforcing the Sherman Act, you've got large swaths of the American radio infrastructure now owned by people who have right-wing agendas for various reasons. And what I'm saying is that Democrats need to start taking this seriously, that the Democratic Party should put together a talk radio caucus. I mean, talk radio is how Dave Bratt took down Eric Cantor, the second or third most powerful politician in the House of Representatives, probably the fifth most powerful politician in the United States back in the day. That was talk radio that took him down. Talk radio was what killed the public option for Obamacare. Right-wing talk radio, by getting Scott Brown elected, a guy who nobody thought had a chance. And I lay all this out in the article. You can find it over at thenation.com right now. It's called Talk Radio. Democrats can't win if they don't play. And, you know, I've tried to reach out to some of our wealthy donors and say, hey, why don't you invest in some radio stations? We have 1,500 right-wing radio stations in the United States and probably fewer than 50 on the left. And a lot fewer than that if you're looking at commercial stations. And this is something that I think this is a big issue. So anyhow, there's that. You don't have to call about that. I just wanted to flag it for you. I wanted to sensitize it to you. I'll share some of that with you on the other side of the break, and we'll pick up your phone calls.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You know, any of those topics, give me a shot. Share the Tom Hartman Program with your friends. We're available on Sirius XM, Free Speech TV, Pacifica, commercial stations nationwide, YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, on the Tom Hartman app, and you can even tell your smart speaker to listen to the Tom Hartman Program. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, and Michael in Bangor, Maine. Hey, Michael, what's on your mind today?
Good afternoon, Tom. I've been listening, and what I wanted to bring up with you, because it seems quite obvious to me, and I just want to get your comments on it, and it seems to me that the whole concept of the change that people on the left are advocating can only be achieved in your minds, and when I say your minds, I'm not trying to say anything negative towards you. I'm just saying it seems to me that the only way that this is ever going to work is that you appoint planners, who Hayek always identified as the socialist structure, and use government coercion. And I'm wondering if you agree with that concept.
No, I strongly disagree with it, Michael. I think that if we pulled the $600 billion a year, and actually I saw a report yesterday that suggests it's actually between $700 and $800 billion a year, and that does not include our military subsidies to the fossil fuel industry for the transportation of fossil fuels to and from the United States. But if we were simply to pull that $600 to $800 billion a year in taxpayer dollars that you and I are giving to the fossil fuel industry tomorrow morning would become completely uncompetitive. Right now, wind power, solar power, and geothermal power are all cheaper than producing electricity or any kind of locomotion using fossil fuels. SAS Airlines, the Scandinavian Airlines, and the country of Norway and the country of Iceland are collaborating on a project. In 2 years, they're going to be rolling out electric airplanes, electric jets, actually. High altitude, high performance aircraft. Just this week, there was announced. Tesla, in part, did the announcement. A massive change in battery technology. Now, where they're going with all silicon anodes and in one kind of new battery, and another kind of new battery has solid blocks of lithium with them that increase the capacity of these batteries. Not doubling it, but increasing it by fivefold or tenfold, or in some cases 30-fold, which means that the electric car that you can buy right now for pretty much the same cost as a gasoline car, and it has a hell of a lot fewer moving parts, it'll last a lot longer, that right now will go 200 miles on a charge, could go a couple of thousand miles on a charge. Fossil fuels are no longer economically viable or sustainable. They simply aren't without these subsidies. So what you're saying Hayek would be accusing me of is exactly what the fossil fuel industry and the Republican Party have been doing.
Well, guess what? You're going to get an agreement out of a civil libertarian.
Okay.
I don't believe that as long as when you say eliminating the subsidies, you're talking about money being given by the feds. I'm not talking about, if you're implying that the subsidies are the tax breaks that they have, that's a different issue. But if they're getting...
It's about 30% of it is tax breaks, about 70% of it is direct cash to them.
They shouldn't get a nickel of it because that'll force them.
I agree. I agree, and I don't think they should get tax breaks either. I think the oil depletion allowance is crazy. It was okay, you drilled an oil well, and as you're taking oil out of it, it's going to reduce in value, so we're going to give you a tax break on all your other profits to compensate you for the loss of value because eventually that well's going to run dry. That's crazy. We don't do that in any other industry.
I agree, but what I think would happen, and I just pose this to you, that get the government out of subsidizing fossil fuels. They will then, these corporations, if they want to survive, are going to have to look at better ways to do what they have done traditionally. Now, that doesn't mean we're going to get rid of fossil fuels in 10 minutes. It's not going to happen. But I absolutely believe in the notion that if it's a free market with no subsidies for any kind of free market enterprise, that market will work better than governmental structure and redistribution.
Yeah, generally speaking, I don't entirely disagree with you, Michael. Where I think probably I disagree with some folks who are so-called free market enthusiasts is that there really is no such thing as a free market. You know, markets are created by government. The rules of the marketplace are created by government. And you can't get away from that. Somebody has to define the rules. You have to have courts to enforce those rules. You have to have jails to put people like the Enron guys in jail when they break those rules. And a lot of the rules right now, in fact, the vast majority of the rules right now, are tilted in the direction of private ownership of our utilities and of subsidies to the fossil fuel industry. And I think that needs to change. And we know now that alternative energies are viable. I mean, Norway just said, no more internal combustion engines. And it wasn't just because of fossil fuels. It's because internal combustion engines are creating somewhere between 5,000 and 10,000 cancers a year in Norway. It was 500 to 1,000 cancers in Norway. Norway is a small country. In the United States, it's 5,000 to 10,000. They have a national healthcare system. They didn't want to have to pay for it. Michael, we'll continue the conversation at another time. But thank you for the call. We'll be right back.
The Tom Hartman Program.
On this week's Science Revolution, Vien Trong with Tom Steyer's Climate Justice joins the show with a vision for a green, red, and blue climate new deal. That vision includes Native Americans, a blue new deal for our threatened oceans, and a green new deal for our coastal communities. Dr. Michael Greger joins us. Have you gained a few COVID pounds? In his new How Not to Diet cookbook, Dr. Greger tells how you can eat your way to a healthy, sustainable weight with plant-based meals. Terry Mills, president of the National Nursing Network, drops by on why a National Nurse for Public Health is important. Plus, Laura Packard, the founder of Healthcare Voices, explains open enrollment under the ACA to help the 16-plus million uninsured Americans get themselves enrolled. Tune into the Science Revolution wherever fine podcasts are found. Richard in Dallas, Texas. Hey, Richard, what's on your mind today?
Yes, I'm in dialysis right now, so I hope can you understand what I say, but I've read a scholarly book about Germany and as he came to power, and there was an overabundance of conservative radio versus liberal radio.
You're so right. And not only that, there was a program. I used to know the German name for it, but it was not a radio show, but this was radio stations all across the country. People were encouraged to call in and on the air report their neighbors for disloyalty, for not being loyal to Adolf Hitler and the Nazi Party. And then when they reported their neighbors, these roving bands and gangs of right-wing thugs would show up at their houses, drag them out of their houses, beat them up in the streets, sometimes set their houses on fire. This was a big part in the mid-30s. This was 33, 34, 35. Yes. Yeah. Richard, thank you for the call. Thank you for that. In fact, I learned that from The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich, William Scherer's book, you know, the classic book on that. Tim in Westmore, Vermont. Hey, Tim, what's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. I'm proposing that somehow we reconfigure National Public Radio into a progressive talk radio format. It's a national network of stations. They're in every city, every college town. Boy, I tell you, we could really jumpstart this quickly. The CPB, yeah, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, hardly gives any more money to NPR, thanks to Reagan and to Gingrich and others. And I think that NPR
I think federal funds are now around 7% of their budget. Most
correct.
Of it is raised locally.
And right,
and
right.
The problem that you have there, Tim, I remember back, I believe it was in the 1980s. It might have been a little later than that, but I'm pretty sure my recollection is this is when Reagan was president, that NPR did, they used to do investigative reporting. And yes. I mean, they still do, but. And they busted Archer's Daniel Midland for ADM for the biggest price-fixing scheme in the history of the United States. It involved vitamin C, as I recall, which they were manufacturing, which is made out of corn. And it cost, and ADM got hit with a $300 million fine, which back in the 80s was one of the largest fines any corporation had ever been hit with in history. Within a year, one of the main sponsors of NPR was ADM, supermarket to the world. And that, you know, and I remember hearing that thinking, okay, I wonder how much more investigative reporting we're going to hear that exposes corporate crime. You know, over the short term, this might be a great way to get these corporations to underwrite you. They don't call it advertising, but it's essentially the same thing. But over the long term, I don't think this will work for them. Being aggressive investigative journalists. And I think that time has borne that out. I do think that we need basic news across the country. And I think NPR in the radio sphere and CPB or public television, you know, on TV, provide that. And God bless them. We really do need just a good authoritative source of news. But that's a completely different thing from progressive talk radio.
And that's true.
There have been some local shows. When I lived in D.C., there was the Tavis Smiley Show in D.C., and Diane Rehm used to have a show in D.C. She didn't so much wear her politics on her shoulder, but or on her arm, but Smiley did to a larger extent. even those shows have largely been replaced by shows that are far more anodyne. I mean, Terry Gross, she does brilliant interviews, but very rarely does she touch on politics. So talk radio, right wing or left wing, are really just a different animal. And I don't think that, you know, there's going to be an organized effort to take over the board of directors of CPB or NPR any day soon.
I was thinking it's a great opportunity to just jumpstart it quickly and just, you know, get back into it.
It would be, but I don't think it's going to work. It's, you know, but, you know, keep thinking. Keep thinking. Good thinking, Tim. Thank you. John in North Bend, Oregon. Hey, John, what's up?
Oh, thank you for taking my call, Tom. I wanted to drop back on the subject of right-wing radio stations on the AM. Down here in North Bend, which is a sister city to Coos Bay, we've had one of the only progressive radio stations in Oregon for years. It's 1340 KBBR.
AM. Yeah, we've been on the air there for 17 years, I think.
I know. Follow you every year. Love your program. You're the light in the day. What I'm reporting is that they have now been taken over with both Newsmax and Fox News for their hourly news breaks. And so we're getting this garbage. I mean, literally garbage, you know. Nancy Pelosi was seen at the airport without a mask and, you know, stuff like that. Anyway, right. I think they are being taken over by the right-wing media. But more
well, it could be, or it could be that somebody incentivized the station management and ownership. I mean, one of the things that I don't want to do, John, is be micromanaging or criticizing any of our affiliates.
Right.
You know, if an affiliate wants to carry right-wing content, God bless them. You know, I think that there should be a marketplace of ideas, and individual radio stations should do what they think is the very best for themselves and for their markets. But I'm telling you, you know, progressive talk radio can work. John, thank you for the call. Larry in Chicago. Hey, Larry, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Perfect segue. I wanted to report to you some numbers because I'm 63 years old, and I've been listening to radio since I could listen to Wally Phillips on WGN in Chicago. Just a quick primer. Clear Channel radio stations are 50,000 watts. And here in Chicago, because we're in the middle of the country with nothing but flat land forever, WGN used to brag about that they at night they could skip across the ionosphere and reach 2/3 of the 38 states in the U.S. and 1/3 of Canada. Now we've got six Clear Channel stations in Chicago. Two of them are owned by right-wing screamers, and WCPT is sitting there at AM 820. They are not Clear Channel. They turn their transmitter up, they power up, and they're on one of the frequencies that is Clear Channel, so they have to give way at night. So they turn their transmitter down at sunset and turn it up at
sunrise.
Yeah,
it's tough in the winter. Yeah. And that has to do with FCC licenses and you know, the value of radio stations and things like that. And again, these are kind of marketplace dynamics. I am so grateful to WCPT and the fellow who owns it and the people who work there because they have been in this for the long haul, and they've been in it through some rough times and some good times, and God bless them. But you're right that some of the largest stations in the country are blowing out right wing talk, and it's not because it's necessarily the most profitable. Talk radio is talk radio. Advertisers are advertisers, and talk radio will catch a marketplace. When we were on CBS in Seattle, for example, I regularly beat Rush Limbaugh on the ratings because we were on a 5,000 watt station. And he was on a 5,000 watt station. It's a matter of platform. Jim in Torrance, California. Hey, Jim, what's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to share with you the response to your thoughts about why Republicans, I guess, are doing so well. Is that it has really every 10 years is the census and the redistricting and the gerrymandering. That is so critical.
Yep.
I don't know if it's too late this year or not, but that's a critical factor of why things are the way they are.
I am hopeful that they will be able to redo the census next year because Trump has rigged this thing. And you're absolutely right. You know, the last cycle, the 2010 cycle, this is why they worked so hard to take over state after state after state. I realize, you know, Obama was president, but this is tough stuff. And this is why Pennsylvania, for example, the majority of people in Pennsylvania voted for a Democrat for Congress. And yet the majority of the Congress people coming out of Pennsylvania are Republicans. In Wisconsin, the majority of people in Wisconsin voted for Democrats for Congress. Yet the majority of the congressional delegation out of Wisconsin is Republican. This is because of gerrymandering. And those are not the only two states. Michigan also. This is the example of gerrymandering, as you define, Jim. Spot on. And by the way, for those just tuning in, the talk radio conversation is around an article that I published in TheNation.com about the topic of talk radio.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
The Hartman Report is a free daily podcast 7 days a week, and you can find our entire three-hour podcast over at TomHartman.com. Patrick in West Los Angeles. Hey, Patrick, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Okay, so yeah, I saw footage yesterday about Ron Johnson talking about in a committee and inquiring about the election and irregularities, as you said. And he also threw in, Hunter Biden. You know, just to put a cherry on top of the thing. But you know, the response from the Democratic senator, and they were going back and forth, was, you know, it was muted at best. I mean, these senators and Congress people, they have to be prepared to fire back, you know, better than that.
Gary Peters was the only guy who really challenged him. I thought Gary Peters did a good job of challenging him, but I would have used stronger language even than Gary Peters did. But Gary Peters is a good guy, and he's a solid progressive.
He is. I mean, it needed to be stronger. I mean, in order for people who don't know anything about the topic, who haven't paid attention, to really get the message, you know, Ron Johnson's message was stronger than Gary Peters was. I mean, you know,
because he was willing to lie and use hyperbole.
The guy is a petulant liar, but you couldn't tell that from the way it was coming out. He sounds as though he's believable.
Yeah, I'm with you, Patrick. I want the Democratic Party to be more aggressive too. Hopefully we'll get there. Hey, special thanks. Thanks so much to Louise Hartman, Sean Taylor, Nate Atwell, Jamie Holly, Joyce the Hammer Nance, Nigel Peacock, Sue Nethercutt, Patrick Hoyt, Jerry Lynn Halbert, Ron Hartenbaum, Chase Spross, Nicholas Miller, Pat Sweeney, and Jabbermocky, the people who make this show possible. And you make this show possible. So thank you. Thank you so much. And thank you for sharing the show with other people. I'm constantly getting feedback that, hey, so-and-so told me. Thank you. Keep it up. Get out there. Get active. Tag your it.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.